Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutin. We're speaking tonight to Bu Selin, the editor of Code Blue, as well as Azrul Muhammad Khalid, Chief Executive Officer of the Gallen Center. Let's talk a little bit about this past year and what you've seen come out of public health policy, particularly in dealing with the pandemic and, you know, with the vaccine rollout. What have been some of the more interesting debates that you've observed over the past year? And, you know, what has that told you about not just the Malaysian public, but the thinking that goes behind creating a public policy in health? Azrul, may I start with you?
Well, one of the things that emerged early on was what was the seriousness of this epidemic. And even though we've seen very much the responses of other countries, Malaysia has had the benefit of a robust healthcare system that has gone through several different epidemics. When you think about MERS, SARS, H1N1, H5N1, and we've been able to, well, I wouldn't say surf through, but we did well. So this was the first time really that the whole of society was practically involved, that drastic measures needed to be imposed, and this lockdown measures were having to be put into place. And you could see that society themselves had to be persuaded into thinking this was something serious.
Okay.
And that there were debates, even to the point of today, where you think about where we were and where we are today, that it took us a while to get to the point where we treat it seriously, that we would actually change our behavior, lifestyle, you know, wear masks, wash hands often. And now when we talk about vaccines, which is going to be, which is the latest point of contention, is whether or not the vaccines work, which vaccines work, and whether or not they're even required for us, you know. So there's a lot of a debate that has happened in the health sphere that's as a result of the COVID crisis. And we're glad that both the Gallen Center and Code Blue are part of this emerging space that, you know, despite having so much complacency in the health sector for so long, now it's been taken more seriously. Yeah. There's more discussion.
I like that
about
you said,
health.
You know, we've taken health for granted.
We have.
Okay, but I want to ask you this. I mean, there've been a lot of advocates and there are a lot of discussions that are about principles, right? All of society approach and all these things get enunciated. But then, but time and time again, we're also up against a doublespeak or contradictory messaging coming from government and so on, especially from government. And we can take, for example, the whole issue about undocumented workers. I mean, that's a classic example of confusion in messaging and in practice, right? So, Selin, from your point of view, how do we untangle that? I mean, how do you get past the nice taglines that are often produced and then the reality, which is somewhat, you know, in contradiction with that?
I think, Sharad, we have to, the government has to acknowledge that it can't manage COVID on its own. We tried to do that when COVID first hit us early last year, and it seemed to work because the first movement control order was 7 weeks long and cases, reported cases, really went down after that. And that was really the government's own doing, right? But also you have to give credit to Malaysians themselves for very, very high public compliance. We just obeyed. The government locked us down, put us at home, it didn't let us go out more than 10 km, and we complied. We willingly did it. There was no problem, you know, you don't see the same problems that you see in other Western countries. But then after that, because COVID is such a dangerous pathogen, I think Malaysia underestimated it, the government underestimated it, and the virus came back. And because of that, now we are in a place where although cases are decreasing, but again, this is, it's a perception. I mean, reported figures are only that, they are reported. So public health experts have already said that we are actually in a mitigation phase, which means that, so mitigation phase is one part of the epidemic, which is after containment. So containment means the outbreak or outbreaks are small enough to contain with lockdown measures. But if the virus is too widespread and it's everywhere in the community, then you can't use lockdown measures to contain it anymore because it's already widespread. So that's when you mitigate. Mitigate means you want to prevent, instead of trying to reduce daily infections, you want to prevent severe disease and death. And to do that, the government has to acknowledge that it has to work together with everyone. I mean, a lot of private health practitioners have been saying this right from the start. You can't do it alone. I mean, you may want to take credit for it, But the reality is that this virus is just too big, this epidemic is too big for anyone to handle.
Is it particularly also because Malaysia has a dual healthcare system?
I mean, that's part of it. But, well, public health has always been the domain of the state anyway.
Okay.
You know?
I wanted to ask both of you this question. Maybe you can take turns in answering. But whether you think your work in this past year, and I know both of you have been working very hard in this past year, whether your work in advocacy and your work in journalism, whether you've seen that start to change things on the outside, influence policy making, decision making, conversations by the media, by the public. Are you seeing any kind of ripple effect, Azrul?
Well, we definitely saw an improvement in the quality of debate in Parliament when it was allowed to be convened, where the budget was being debated upon.
Mm.
And you saw health emerging quite strongly as compared to previous debates where health was barely mentioned. Of course, it's not just because of COVID. The issues that were being raised was concerning cancer, was concerning chronic kidney disease, non-communicable diseases, but also the long-term effects of these diseases on people, issues of malnutrition, stunting. So a lot of the focus today has been on, yes, COVID, but also everything else under health, which is a good improvement. And definitely, if we're talking about politicizing health in a good way, as what was mentioned by Sulin, you know, I can tell you, Mel, that we should and would be able to benefit from a discussion where people feel that they have a stake in the quality of healthcare that they're receiving, and not just being passive recipients who would then say, bersyukurlah that we've received this from the government, you know, and instead talk about what do we need for an aging society, what do we need for the future for healthcare, what kind of medicines, what kind of treatment that's going to be available for us if we fall sick. You know, these discussions are necessary.
I want to just add to Melissa's question, and for you, Sulin, to respond to it, in that, you know, in the issue of whether health journalism as a whole is also transforming. And over the last year, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about how much journalists have to know about epidemiology and epidemiological principles in order to report accurately.
Right.
And, you know, and the fixation with listicles or, you know, or numbers and these charts that are constantly produced, right? What about you? What your personal challenge to deal with something as complex as an epidemic and the medical science behind it? What has that been your struggle, and how do you see it with the rest of the fraternity, as it were?
That's a good question. So COVID is complexing even to scientists, right? What more to journalists who don't have a background in medicine? One of my writers does have a background in medicine, so that helps with certain jargon, but COVID, obviously, it's a new disease, and we had to learn by talking to just as many people as possible. And because we're so focused on health, we know the difference between a GP and an epidemiologist and a public health specialist. Mm. Whereas for mainstream media, if they see doctor, they think doctor knows everything. That's not true. So when you talk to a lot of people, and of course, because it's science and people have differing opinions, like one example is, are we testing enough? Some experts that I spoke to said we are not. Others said we are, and there's no point testing more because tests are really expensive and they only capture that moment in time as to whether you have the disease or not, right? So there are a lot of differing opinions. So Code Blue, we don't have a stand, obviously, and we publish whatever it is that experts say. And because when you talk to a lot of people, and obviously we read a lot of international news reports as well, the BBC Stat, the US Stat News, New York Times, they have really good reports on COVID and on medical issues. And then when you read a lot and then you learn, and then when you talk to a lot of people, and then it's, you know, you can just ask these scientists questions. Like, if you know them, you've been talking to them for a while, you can ask, what does this mean? What does this mean? And they'll tell you.
Right.
And that's when you pick up the knowledge. And when with that knowledge, then you can also, I think more importantly, you can challenge what it is that the government is telling you.
Right.
Because you have the knowledge yourself. And you don't just swallow hook, line and sinker what the government is telling you. And you can interpret the data. So like Sharad, when you ask how is it like in the mainstream media, I have to say this honestly, I think their knowledge is really, really basic when it comes to COVID. even a year into the epidemic. And I don't really blame them or their newsrooms per se. I think it's because it's quite rare for mainstream media organizations to have just one dedicated person reporting on COVID. I think a lot of newsrooms, they just swap people. And when that happens, and because they're also not just reporting on COVID, but on political issues, so you don't really have one person specifically tasked to report on COVID. So then, because of that, most people don't end up brushing up their knowledge about it.
Well, in the couple of minutes that we have left, I want to ask you both. I mean, both of you work within this field and talk a lot about COVID. How has the new amendment to the emergency ordinance on fake news impacted your work? Because it specifically says news, fake news about COVID-19. Does that make your work more difficult? Do you think about what you're saying more now because of this, Sulin?
Yeah. Well, Code Blue, we're definitely more careful with what we report. In a sense, we don't censor ourselves, but if it is something that I think could be controversial, then I make sure that we get comments from the other side first before publishing. Mm-hmm. And ever since the vaccine rollout, I've noticed that a lot of hospitals, public hospitals, mostly MOH, they have become more open about giving comments immediately, so that helps.
Okay, that's good. Azrael?
We've always been able to maintain a robustness in doing the due diligence for information that's being made public. So when it did come out, we were concerned that the interpretation is being done by somebody who may decide that this is fake or not fake. And we've seen several instances in the past where something that was not fake was deemed as fake. You know, maybe it was premature to release that information.
Correct. So the information could change, right? Yeah.
So our concern really is that science is evolving. It evolves. Science concerning COVID-19 changes practically every other day. So what could be considered false previously could be truth today. And one issue is concerning whether or not pregnant women could be vaccinated. Earlier, it was recommended against. And it was actually labeled as fake, that you could be vaccinated. And then later on, the recommendation was that women who are pregnant can be vaccinated. So in science, we need to not have these kinds of censorship or, you know, sanctions that limit the robust discussions and the debates that must be cultivated in order for us to have a much more thorough understanding of the science, especially when it comes to outbreaks like COVID-19.
Thank you both for being on the show, particularly in helping us mark World Health Day today. We appreciate your time. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Sasha.
That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. But before we leave you tonight, a quick reminder to get all your COVID-19 vaccine news and information on the Astro Awani app as well as astroawani.com. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.
Good night.